Well, it's nice to be here with you, gentlemen. If you've got a Bible open, that'd be really handy. What I'd like to do today is to look with you at the stories of three men from the Old Testament, Esau and Jacob and Samson. If you're not used to the Bible, I hope it'll still make sense, and I hope I might motivate you to read these stories. It's interesting that as God speaks to us, he doesn't just give us a list of rules, he tells us stories. And for us, particularly stories about men, that kind of can connect with us. Let's see how we go. There's a mate of mine who's a very successful businessman, and he's taught me a little saying. In fact, he's taught me some things about life. And his saying is, always play the long game. Always play the long game. Think of the future, think ahead, play the long game. Now, if you're going to do that, a lot of what's involved is self-control. Well, the other way of saying that is delayed gratification. Okay, self-control or delayed gratification. I read a book by an American journalist called David Axt. We have met the enemy. I don't know if you can read it. Self-control in an age of excess. Now, what the book's about is he's saying we struggle with self-control in the Western world today. Why? Because, man, you can have anything you want and you can have it now, especially with the internet. He said, in fact, on credit, you can get all the food you want, all the sex you want, you can get porn, you can get gambling, you can get what, and you can do it all on a credit card. And he goes through and lists how, well, he has, particularly in America, how it's killing us, killing people. Basically, you just self-control. And he talks about the secret to life and being successful really is self-control or delayed gratification. And he talks about the marshmallow test. I don't know if you've ever seen this. You've got that. Basically, the idea is they get a little kid, 5, 6 years old, sit him or her in a room and put one marshmallow in front of them and say, now, you can have one marshmallow now, or I'm going to come back in 5 minutes, and if that marshmallow's still there, I'll give you two, and you can have them. And so, you can, actually, if you want to, you can Google it. You find it on YouTube. They've got pictures of the little kids kind of sitting there. And the kids that could wait, delay gratification and have two, they tracked them through later life and found that they did better in terms of success in life, relationships, their school grades, they had less problems with addictions, all of that kind of thing. The secret to life is playing the long game. In fact, listen to what he says about self-control and what really makes it work. He says, besides, what matters when it comes to self-control isn't so much willpower as vision. The ability to see the future so that the long-run consequences of our short-term choices are vividly clear. Got that? And the more clearly you can see the future, the better you control yourself now. He says, self-control is about seeing beyond the moment, about deferring gratification if necessary, because we have some larger, ongoing wishes that we prefer not to subvert. It'd be great to have another drink for the road just now, but it'd be better not to wake up in the drunk tank tomorrow. That's what he's saying about life. Now, we live in a society that's kind of madly going the other direction. I was a bit of a Simpsons fan. Well, for the first 10 years anyway. I think after Series 10, they started to lose it. But there's a particular show where Mo, who owns the bar, if you're not a Simpsons fan, Mo, who owns the bar, turns the bar into a fast food establishment. And he buys an ex-Navy industrial deep fryer the size of a swimming pool, and it turns up on a low loader. And Mo says to Homer, "Homer, this thing can deep fry a buffalo in 40 seconds. And Homer says, 40 seconds? I want it now. Now, that is our world, isn't it? That's, we want it, and we want it now. Just, if you just keep that in your head and look around at everything that's advertised, that's the way it works. Okay, play the long game, delayed gratification, self-control. That's all the introduction to the first of the twins. Now, I want to talk to you about two men from Genesis 25, the twins. The first one is Esau. Now, if St. Patrick's the patron saint of Ireland, I reckon Esau could be the patron saint of Australia. Okay, you read the story, he's the rugged outdoors man. Like Australia, we love the rugged outdoors, don't we? Most of the TV shows we watch are about the rugged outdoors. So we've got, Crocodile Dundee, Steve Irwin was a hero. The latest one that, my five-year-old grandson loves this one, the Outback Wrangler. That's this bloke, Matt Wright, catching, spent a lot of money relocating crocodiles. Anyway, they're just a handbag with legs. My grandson loves this show, and this guy's going to make a whole lot of money out of it. So red hair, outdoors, kind of live for the moment kind of bloke. As I think of Esau, maybe most of you guys would be AFL fans, won't you? Mostly? I'm sorry, I apologise, forgive me, I don't understand AFL. Although the way our rugby team's going, I'm thinking about moving to AFL, all right? But Scott Higginbotham, who's a rugby fan, born in Perth, played for Melbourne, now he's playing in Japan. 6'5", 110 kilos, red hair, and has the sense not to be with the Wallabies at the moment. In Japan, that's kind of Esau, or if you were a rugby league fan, Paul Fatty Vorton, red hair, played for Manly, the Roosters, Australia, made beer commercials, runs the footy show. You know, there's patron saint of Australia. Everything going for him. In fact, if you want to get Esau in your head, here's a picture of him, I reckon. There's Esau, okay? Now, not only that, but he stood in line for the greatest inheritance ever. Because Esau, now I don't know if you're not familiar with the Bible, but Esau, God says to Abraham that God will bless him, that God will make his name great, that God will give him the whole land of Canaan, the land that he'd gone to, that God would make him into a great nation, and that God would somehow bless the whole world through Abraham's descendants. And Abraham has the son Isaac, and then Isaac has the son, firstborn son is Esau. Esau's Abraham's grandson, and he stands in line to inherit all of that. Fantastic. And yet, he lost it all. He lost the blessing. He lost being the blessed nation. He does become a nation, but the nation that comes from him, Edom, lives under the judgment of God. He doesn't inherit. He loses it all. Now, how does that happen? Well, here's the question I want to work out within the next 30 minutes or so. How does he lose it all? And what should we as men today in Australia, what should we learn from it? All right. Now, we want to get started. It's the deal with the meal. So if you've got a Bible there, chapter 25 of Genesis, you can follow along or just listen, and I'll read the story again. Read nicely the first time. I'm going to read it again and just get the vibe, just get the feel as we read it. So I'm going to go to Genesis 25 and verse 24. The twins are born. We won't go to the meal straight up. We're going to go to their birth. That's right, I'm sorry. The twins are born and they are as different. Esau and Jacob are as different as, I don't know if you remember that old movie, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. They are completely different. So Genesis 25, 24 and the birth of the twins. When the time, Rebecca, their mother. When the time came for her, Rebecca, to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first who came out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they called him Esau, and Esau means hairy. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So they called him Jacob. Jacob means he grasps the heel. Which actually is a way of saying he was a deceiver or a trickster. A little bit like to say, if someone's pulling your leg today, right, they're kind of having you on. They're telling you something that's not quite true. So it's the idea of he grasps the heel. That's why they called him that. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. So they look different at birth, but as they grow up, they're very different as well. The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was content to stay at home among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So Esau's a kind of rugged outdoor type. Esau would have had a four-wheel drive ute and a couple of bull terriers and that kind of thing. Jacob was more your kind of stay-at-home, computer games kind of guy, like reading and that sort of thing. And the parents play favourites. Dad loves Esau and Mum loves Jacob, and favouritism in a family is never good. Then you get to the meal deal. So look at verse 29. Chapter 25, verse 29. Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, "Quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished." That is why he's also called Edom. Now, Edom means red. Jacob replied, "First, sell me your birthright." Now, you've got to say, we'll come to Jacob after morning tea. Jacob is not an attractive character. He's greedy, sneaky, grasping. And now, the idea is he's saying, sell me your birthright as the eldest son. And the eldest son was the one who inherited double the share. He was the one that was going to get the blessing. And look at what Esau says, verse 32. "Look, I'm about to die," Esau said. "What good is the birthright to me?" But Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Now, he's not going to die. I looked it up. University tests have proved no one ever died from missing lunch. Okay? It doesn't happen. If you've got little kids, no little kid ever died from driving past McDonald's and not stopping. And they might think they're going to, but the difference is Esau's an adult. He's not a child. He's hungry and he wants satisfaction. And when does he want it? Now. Not in 40 seconds, now. And so what does he do? He sells his birthright to his little brother. Now you notice in verse 33, Jacob says, "Swear to me." Throughout the stories in Genesis, as they're called the patriarch narratives about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the words have power. As God speaks, it comes true. And very often, when a character speaks or makes a promise or says something, the words come back. The words and promises have real power. And so Esau swears to Jacob, "Yes, I give you my birthright." And then verse 34, then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. Lentil, like he sold his birthright, didn't even have meat in the soup, can you believe it? Lentil stew. He ate and drank, got up and left, and so Esau despised his birthright. Now when you look at the translation, you translate as he treated his birthright with contempt. And gave it away for a bowl of soup. And as far as I can tell, he has absolutely no intention of honouring that. He just said what needed to be said, ate and left. But his words come back to haunt him. You move to, so chapter 25, remember, when the twins were born, Isaac is 60 years old. It's 2 years older than me, so he still hasn't hit his peak, okay? 60, he's getting old, he's 60. By the time you get to chapter 27, he's an old man. He feels like he's going to die soon, and it's much later. He feels like he's going to die soon. He's determined to bless or give his blessing to Esau. We're told earlier that Esau is his favourite son. Why? Because he used to hunt venison for him. It's interesting that both Isaac and his son Esau let their, their appetites control what they do. No, their bellies are very important to them. So Isaac plans to give Esau the firstborn's blessing. And you might wonder at the moment, what's the difference between the firstborn's birthright, his inheritance rights, his birthright, and the blessing? And what we'll see in a little while is we go to Hebrews chapter 12 in the New Testament, and they're used almost interchangeably. Part of the birthright of being the firstborn was that you got this blessing. So the New Testament kind of thinks of them together, these special privileges that come with being the firstborn. Okay, 27:1. I'm going to read that chapter. It's a beautiful story. Just come with me on it. Okay, chapter 27, verse 1. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, so Isaac now lives in the darkness, he could no longer see, he called Esau, his oldest son, and said to him, "My son." "Here I am," he answered. Isaac said, "I am now an old man, and I don't know the day of my death. Now then, get your equipment, your quiver and bow, and go out to the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare me the kind of tasty food I like and bring it to me to eat so that I may give you my blessing before I die." Now Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. When Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, 'Bring me some game and prepare some tasty food to eat so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die. Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock and bring me 2 choice young goats so I can prepare some tasty food for your father, just the way he likes it. And then take it to your father to eat so that he may give you his blessing before he dies.' Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, 'But my brother Esau is a hairy man while I have smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I'd appear to be tricking him and would bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing.' His mother said to him, 'My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say. Go and get them for me.' So he went and got them and brought them to his mother, and she prepared some tasty food just the way his father liked it. And Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her older son, which were in the house, and put them on her younger son, Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed her son Jacob the tasty food and the bread she had made. He went to his father and said, 'My father.' 'Yes, my son,' he answered. 'Who is it?' Jacob said to his father, 'I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing.' Isaac asked his son, 'How did you find it so quickly, my son?' 'The Lord your God gave me success,' he replied. And Isaac said to Jacob, 'Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not.' Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, 'The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau.' He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau, so he proceeded to bless him. 'Are you really my son Esau?' he asked. 'I am,' he replied. Then he said, 'My son, bring me some of your game to eat, so that I may give you my blessing.' Jacob brought it to him, and he ate, and he bought some wine, and he drank. And then his father Isaac said to him, 'Come here, my son, and kiss me.' So he went to him and kissed him. And when Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he blessed him and said, 'Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field the Lord has blessed.'" Now notice, he deceives his dad, right, with a goat and an article of clothing. It's very important later on. A goat and an article of clothing. And then Isaac blesses him. "May God give you heaven's dew and the earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed and those who bless you be blessed." After Isaac finished blessing him and Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence, his brother Esau came in from hunting. He too prepared some tasty food and brought it to his father. And then he said to him, "My father, please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing." His father Isaac asked him, "Who are you?" "I am your son," he answered, "your firstborn Esau." Isaac trembled violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came, and I blessed him, and indeed he will be blessed." When Esau heard his father's words, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me too, my father." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing." Esau said, "Isn't he rightly named Jacob? This is the second time he's taken advantage of me. He took my birthright and now he's taken my blessing." Then he asked, "Haven't you reserved any blessing for me?" Isaac answered Esau, "I've made him lord over you and have made all his relatives his servants, and I have sustained him with grain and new wine. So what can I possibly do for you, my son?" Esau said to his father, "Do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father." Then Esau wept aloud. His father Isaac answered him, "Your dwelling will be away from earth's riches, away from the dew of heaven above. You will live by the sword, and you will serve your brother. And when you grow restless, you will throw his yoke from off your neck." Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. He said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near, and I will kill my brother Jacob." When Rebekah was told what her older brother, what her older son Esau had said, she sent for her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Your brother Esau is planning to avenge himself by killing you. Now then, my son, do what I say. Flee at once to my brother Laban in Haran, which is in the northeast, back towards Mesopotamia. Stay with him for a while until your brother's fury subsides. When your brother is no longer angry with you and forgets what you did to him, I'll send word to you to come back from there. Why should I lose both of you in one day?" Then Rebekah said to Isaac, "I'm disgusted with living because of these Hittite women. If Jacob takes a wife from among the women of this land, from the Hittite women like these, my life would not be worth living." And so Jacob leaves, runs really, with nothing but a staff in his hand. He runs northeast to Haran, and we'll see what happens. He returns 20 years later. God has made him a rich man. He has wives and children and flocks and herds. And Jacob returns and has to meet his brother again in chapter 33. And we're told Jacob looked up and there was Esau coming to meet him with 400 men. And Jacob's terrified. But strangely, Esau is kind to him. Maybe 20 years calms things down. Over the coming centuries, Esau's family and descendants become the nation of Edom. Jacob's descendants become the nation of Israel. The two nations become enemies. Ultimately, the nation of Edom lives under the judgment of God. Now, if you want to understand the story of Esau, you've got to, for these stories, in terms of, because there's no obvious instructions here, therefore we should go and do, you've got to read the Old Testament through the glasses of the New. And you put the New Testament glasses on, you see, what is it? What is it? How should we understand this? The New Testament uses the character of Esau in kind of explaining two of the great themes that run through the whole Bible. Two great themes. The first one is this: God is sovereign or king. That is, that God is completely in charge. He's God, we're not. He decides, we don't. Have a look. So what I've done, actually, I've left out the most important part of the whole story. If you look at Genesis 25, look at verse 21. Now, I've deliberately left this till last, but if you want to understand this story from the Bible's point of view, from the New Testament's point of view, this is how to understand it. See, 25:21. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was childless. The Lord answered his prayer and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other within her and she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. And where you see Lord in all capitals, that's the personal name of the God of Israel. Yahweh, as far as we know to pronounce it. So went to inquire of the Lord. Verse 23, the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." Now, that's not the way of the world, right? In their world. You notice, God had decided before they were born, God had chosen Jacob and not Esau. God had chosen that the older would serve the younger before they were born. And what the story shows is this, that God works out his purposes in our world, and God works out his purposes for people, often in spite of people's willfulness, or if you want to use sinfulness. So people will try and do the wrong thing and change it, but no, God's plans work out. So you look at the story, Isaac probably knew what God had promised about Jacob. I'm sure Rebekah told him. And yet he still works really hard to give the blessing to Esau. He wants to, he's going against what the prophecy said. Rebekah interferes, manipulates, whatever, or is she just trying to help, give God a helping hand? Esau throws away his birthright and then tries really hard to renege on the promise. Jacob is greedy, sneaky, dishonest. He's a really nasty piece of work. And yet God decides that he'll bless him and see the whole world blessed through one of his descendants. So I can't go into it this morning, but interestingly, the Apostle Paul uses Esau and Jacob as the examples in Romans chapter 9 to 11. Romans 9 to 11 is perhaps the greatest passage in the Bible about the sovereignty of God, or God being in charge, or God choosing people. And that they're the great example. Now, I haven't got time to go into that. You can have a wrestle with Romans 9 to 11 sometime yourself. So that's one theme. God's in charge. He chooses. And so. But the other theme is this: actions and consequences. We're real people with real decisions. We make decisions, and they have consequences. The Bible holds both true. And where do you see that with Esau? Well, in Hebrews chapter 12. Now, it'll be on the screen, or you can turn in your Bible, whichever you'd prefer. Look at what Hebrews chapter 12 says. The book of Hebrews is written to, well, Hebrew Christians from a Jewish background who have become followers of Jesus but are now living with persecution. The clouds are on the horizon. They are beginning to suffer for being Christian. And the whole thing is saying, don't drift back to Judaism. Don't drift back to being Jewish. Stay following Jesus. And you get to chapter 12, it says this: see that no one is sexually immoral or is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. Afterwards, as you know, when he wanted to inherit this blessing, he was rejected, even though he sought the blessing with tears. He could not change what he had done. See there, in verse 16, the words inheritance rights. Now, that's the New International Translation, inheritance rights. Literally, it's his birthright. You see, though, verse 16 is about his birthright, and then verse 17 is about the blessing from his father. The two are kind of used parallel. That's why I think they're almost interchangeable, what they are. What's it saying? Don't be like Esau. He had this amazing inheritance and promise from God, and he threw it away for one lousy meal. Point being, he made that choice and it had consequences. And where it says in verse 17, no, it's literally, he couldn't change what he had done, couldn't change right at the end. Literally, like in the original it says, he found no place for repentance. He wept, but he could not change it. He couldn't undo it. Remember that verse, 27:34 says, when Esau heard his father's words, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me too, my father. It's too late. Here's one thing I've noticed. The New Testament writers talk about, if you're a follower of Jesus, now I know maybe not all of us are, so if you're not yet, if you're rubbing your chin thinking about, it's terrific that you're here. Okay, terrific that you're here. A lot of what I say will be to those who are signed up followers of Jesus, but if you're not there yet, that's great. Just have a look over our shoulder and have a think, okay? But if you're a follower of Jesus, the New Testament talks about our inheritance regularly, about this huge promise of what's so valuable in the future. In fact, when Paul prays for the Christians in Ephesus, look at what he prays for them. He says, I pray also that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he's called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints. By the way, when the New Testament says saints, it just means, you know, the holy people, God's people, okay? The glorious inheritance, but he's saying that your eyes will be opened, you'll see the value of what God's promised you. Or 1 Peter... the beginning. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he's given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Yes, and into what? And into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil or fade, kept in heaven for you. The promise of eternal life in a new creation, and to be raised to be like Jesus and to see him to be like him. Pie in the sky when you die? No. It's future, but it's anchored in history, in the birth, life, death, and the resurrection of Jesus. And it happened, and you can know that. Now, I want to ask you, do you think about, you know, follower of Jesus, do you think about your inheritance? Do you think about the future? Because we live in a society that says, 40 seconds, I want it now. So, you know, don't save, get it on credit. Does Australians owe $34 billion on credit cards? Average debt is $4,300. The average Aussie pays, average credit card holder pays $700 a year in interest. We just, you know, or people used to buy lottery tickets. Well, that's too slow. Now you need instant scratchies because I want it now. And you can arrange loans over the phone, or you can go on holiday. You can arrange a loan to go on a holiday. I can't imagine that's bad enough coming back from a holiday. Imagine coming back from the holiday, and then you've got to pay it off. But that's what we want it now. You see what Hebrews says? I think we've got it again. Have we got the Hebrews again? No. Yeah, there we go. Okay. What's the writer of the Hebrews saying? It's a bit like the story about the old, you know, the old story about the preacher talking and saying, you know, sex before marriage. Is it worth a lifetime of regret for 1 hour's pleasure? And the audience says, how do you make it last an hour? All right? It's just... our nation's like that, isn't it? Our nation's like that. If you're born in Australia, Australia is a nation. Man, we have an amazing inheritance that we've inherited. Why? We've inherited centuries of worked out Judeo-Christian worldview. And that is, you wonder why the world wants to come and live here? That's why. Because we understand that there's a God. Because of that, we understand the value of human life. Because of that, we value the individual. Because of that, we care for people with a kind of social security safety net. Because of that, we have the rule of law. Because of that, those who make the laws are under the laws themselves, or they should be. And that those with power should serve others. But we're busily running away from it and ignoring where that's all come from. Or even as an individual, if you're born here or have been able to live here, the birthright, I tell you the birthright, this, you can have the Bible in your hand and not be afraid to read it. It's a huge blessing. And then people in so many other countries would love to have that. And yet the tragedy is we take it for granted. Now, Hebrews is written to people who've started following Jesus and the temptation is to drift away. Could that ever happen? Well, you notice what Hebrews says, don't sell your soul for a bowl of soup. I've got a list of seven people that I pray for. Actually, I don't pray for them often enough, but I've prayed for them for a long time. I need to keep going. Seven people who were clear, who said they were Christian, who were keenly Christian. In fact, six of them were in Christian leadership. A few of them were clergy. And now they would say they're not Christian anymore. They've drifted. They've walked away. And it wasn't one decision. It was a whole lot of little sips of soup. And then all of a sudden they're gone. Now, here's part of the frustration is this. So many Christians ask, you think, oh, well, I'm not going there at all. But so many Christians say, oh, what is the soup of the day, by the way? Is it the soup du jour or whatever? What is the soup of the day? So I've given us some thought, gentlemen, and I've been around 35 years or so as a follower of Jesus. I've seen a few people eat some soup. I have the recipes for a few soups here, and you might like to have a think about it. So the first one that I've seen can be a problem is possessions soup. Here we go. I've got the recipe here and a few serving suggestions. I'll just give it to you if you like. Possession soup is a rich and luxurious soup flavoured with comfort. The ingredients would be you need to throw in some fresh cars, new furniture, a beautiful house, and garnish with big boys' toys. Serving suggestion, you need a bigger and bigger spoon each time because you can never actually have enough of this soup to really satisfy. The other one where I work in the city is success soup. This is a very sweet soup. It's very expensive. The ingredients are your time and your soul. Now, you may need to kind of sift out some of the significant relationships in life and let them go so you can be successful. A serving suggestion, well, it's only ever really enjoyed with company so that others can see you eating success in this way. The really dangerous one is adultery soup. This is a hot and spicy soup. The main ingredient is someone who makes you feel good. You can serve it with the lie that my wife doesn't understand me. Of course, we all know the real problem is your wife does understand you. That's the problem. You need to separate out the common sense, throw in a little selfishness disguised as love. This is the most intoxicating soup of all, but when it gets to its use-by date and goes sour, it always, always ends in tears. There's another one as well, which would be selfishness soup. This is a bitter soup. This soup can be sweet at first, but has a bitter aftertaste. It can be mixed with anything in life, really. The main ingredients are me first, unforgiveness, bitterness, malice, and regrets. If you can add enough selfishness, you can turn your whole life bitter. Serving suggestion, and I say this in all seriousness because I've got some heartache with someone I know about this, regardless of how you start, selfishness soup is always finished alone. Gentlemen, if you're a follower of Jesus, and I know most of us will be, Hebrews is saying always play the long game. Value your inheritance. If I could finish with one last thing. Do you know there's one last thing we might give away without realising it? You know what that is? It's the opportunity to invest in eternity, to live our lives so that what we do now will have value in eternity. Investing in people, investing in the kingdom of God. And that, right? How might we give that away? Well, Kurt Vonnegut, the American author, said this: "We are here on earth to fart around. Don't let anybody tell you any different. The way to give away the opportunity to invest in eternity is to live your life farting around." Now, a little bit of that doesn't hurt, but if that's all we're doing, we're giving away our inheritance. All right. So I ask you, do you think about your inheritance that Jesus has promised you? We can say we believe it, but do our actions show it? Does it occupy our thoughts, our passions? Do we long to see the Lord Jesus? First lesson, learn from Esau. Value your inheritance.